Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And since he's kind of already made an appearance, because right as we kicked in right there, you could hear Yinka going through, I think it was a bag of chips or something. So since he's already made his appearance on the podcast, I figure we'll kick it to Yinka first. Saxy Prince, what's going on, my man?
Okay, first of all, that wasn't even me, so you can blame JR for all that. but no,
that was
good.
Me?
It wasn't me. Definitely wasn't me. But anyways, I've been good. You know, good day. Didn't have too much to do at work. Just been a, kind of an easy week. So, payday on Friday, y'all. So,
yeah, it's a good week then. It's a good week. JR, man, what's going on with you, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Another day. You know, just ready to talk some football.
All right. Well, let us get to it. Saxy Prince, what you got for us? Question of the day.
Yeah, we all brothers. Four black brothers on the pod and one. Whatnot, but I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about my younger brother, Kunle. We got into enough shenanigans when we were younger and whatnot, but it always worried me, freaked me out when I, when I would hurt him in any kind of way. You know, like we were goofing off, playing around or whatever, and all of a sudden he banged his head and he started to cry and stuff. So what was, like, the worst, like, you guys induced incident with one of the siblings that you had? Mine was one time where we were playing around the beds and stuff, and then Kunle slammed his head on, you know, one of the, like, the bed frames, and there's like a gash on his forehead. And the thing is it turned white, so I thought it was good, but it turned white just before it started to, like, bleed heavily. And he did one of those things where, you know when you see a child start to cry, but then they nothing comes out, and then, like, 10 minutes later, like, they start really, really crying. Yeah, I was so scared. So, what are y'all's sibling hurting stories?
Before we get to that, though, I think the most important part of the story is what happened when your parents came home.
Man, I had never got my butt whooped so much, so long. Oh man, I couldn't play video games for like a month. Like, I couldn't even, like, go near my brother because they were so afraid that I was going to hurt him again. So, because Kunle was kind of tattletale when we were younger. So, I was always fearful of hurting him because, like, I don't want to have to deal with all that. So, yeah.
I guess QB1, what you got for us, man?
Well, see, unfortunately, I kind of ruined this whole question because I'm an only child, which isn't a bad thing. And, you know, I love having all the gifts to myself and not having to share it with a sibling during Christmas. But, I mean, that's kind of the worst that I've experienced, too. The same as Kunle, you know, that bed frame, it really hurts. But I used to always stub my toe on it. I never hit my head on it. I used to always stub my toe on the edge of the bed frame, my toenail, every single time. So that's, like, my worst experience that I've ever had.
Yeah, and I think I'm messing up your question too, because I am my mother's only child, but I am kind of the eldest, so I have two younger sisters. And yeah, there were really any occasions where we were doing any kind of roughhousing or anything where, you know, any of them got hurt. So I think it might just be you on the pod tonight who is the abusive sibling beating up your family members and stuff. So
apparently, I maybe had some vendetta against my younger sibling or something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that might be a you thing. You might want to go talk to somebody about that, man.
Hey, I got a degree in psych, so I spent four years talking to people about hey. It.
Spent 4 years getting that worked out. Well, let's jump into some of this Vikings talk. So JR wasn't on the last pod, and we talked a little bit about some of the quarterback stuff that, you know, some of it's jokes with, you know, Case Keenum throwing himself into the QB1 conversation. And some of it's not, I guess, you know, as much of a joke where you have, you know, reports continuing to come out that Teddy Bridgewater is healthy, he's looking good, he's strong. As soon as he comes off PUP, the reports he's gonna be able to jump back in there and start practicing. So JR, since you weren't here the last time, I guess, what are your thoughts on things? My question to the guys last time was, let's say Case Keenum strings another game, another couple games together, like the one he had last week. Do they pull him if Sam is healthy in a couple weeks, or do they keep riding the hot hand for as long as they got it?
Well, I mean, it all depends on Sam Bradford's health. If Sam Bradford is healthy, he's the quarterback of this football team. Mike Zimmer has repeatedly said that no matter how bad or good things are going, he says Sam is our quarterback for the 2017 season. But it really does throws a wrench into things, you know, with Teddy Bridgewater coming off the pup here in the next couple of weeks. Also, if Case Keenum does continue to play well, it's going to be a tough decision just because chemistry is a big thing in pro sports. If Case Keenum is out there playing well, you know, continuously having those outlier games like he did against the Buccaneers, it's going to be a really tough decision, and especially if Bradford comes back in there and he struggles. There's going to be rumblings about it. Everyone knows Bradford is a better quarterback than Case Keenum. That's a no-brainer just because of, you know, how they performed at this point in their careers. But it's a really, really interesting situation because there's so many different variables and turns that this whole quarterback situation can take. But Sam Bradford is the quarterback of this football team if he's healthy.
And, you know, kind of continuing on the conversation of quarterbacks, you just wrote an awesome article for Purple PTSD where you broke down the game plan that we used to really let Case Keenum have that game that he did. But one of the things that you often will hear is that, you know, ADOT and different things like that are kind of a product of the scheme. So that was kind of one of the things where we always talk about maybe Sam needs to be more aggressive. And people would always say that he's just doing what the scheme is asking to do. And with Shurmur through his entire career, Shurmur's always had Sam Bradford be a, you know, bottom third of the lead, ADOT type of quarterback, very low risk throws for the majority of the throws, very few shots downfield. But like you just said, Sam Bradford is a more talented quarterback than Case Keenum. Case Keenum in his two games is in, I think he's number 11 in the league for ADOT. He's taking way more chances downfield, way more shot plays, opening us up for way more explosive plays. So I guess from your perspective, why would a coach rein in the more talented quarterback but give the green light to a quarterback like a Case Keenum who isn't as talented as Sam Bradford?
Well, basically what you saw was it was a different type of scheme as opposed to when Keenum was in there, as opposed to when Bradford was in there. So everyone knows that Dalvin Cook is going to get the football. And basically the Bucs were saying they're going to take Dalvin Cook away and make Case Keenum make throws down the field. And what you saw was Pat Shurmur kind of shocked the Bucs. They weren't expecting him to come out and throw the ball down the field like they did and taking those shots down the field with Case Keenum, because everyone knows that Dalvin Cook is a heavy, heavy percentage of the offense. I think he's nearly, I think like I want to say 60% of the offense to this point. And everyone knows that he's going to get his touches. He's going to get at least 20 touches a game, counting, you know, receptions and rushing attempts. And the Bucs were saying, okay, we're going to load the box and we're going to make Case Keenum make these throws down the field. And what you saw was Pat Shurmur used reverse psychology on them, so to speak, and said, okay, we're going to come out, we're going to throw the ball and make them respect our deep passing game, because I know they're going to try to put 7 or 8 guys at a time in the box and take away Dalvin Cook. So we're going to take advantage of these early matchups they're going to give me on the perimeter. And that's what you've seen when they were going after guys like a Vernon Hargraves and those other corners that they had in there. And you saw Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen taking advantage of those matchups early on. So I thought it was a really, really wise strategy by Pat Shurmur. Very risky, but very wise. And it kind of was like he was a step ahead. And he kind of used reverse psychology on them, taking deep shots down the field early and often. And as you saw, as the game went along, it opened up those running lanes for Dalvin, because now they have to respect that deep passing game because Case Keenum was making those throws down the field.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that that Pat Shurmur kind of used the reverse psychology on him, but it actually goes along with something that that Eric Eager says a lot, and we got into it a little bit on the podcast that we did last night, where it's actually the smart play from an analytical standpoint, because Case Keenum is a sub 60% completion guy for his career. His touchdown to interception ratio is, well, before this game anyway, it was barely above 1-to-1. And so the smarter play is, I mean, you're probably going to lose your backup anyway. Why not wing it down the field and see if you can hit some big plays versus trying to have him methodically bring it up the field? And Eric said that the work that they've done at Pro Football Focus shows that having that higher volatility kind of big play quarterback, especially for your backup, is the way you want to go, because I mean, you're likely to lose with your backup anyway, but those, you know, high variance guys like a Case Keenum will steal you a couple games, you know, by being willing to take those shots, those YOLO balls, as Yinka was calling them when we were going through the preseason game. So it's interesting that, you know, kind of what you saw and what you would kind of think through from a, you know, film grinder breakdown perspective aligns perfectly with what, you know, a guy like Eric, who's going at it from an analytical perspective, would see. Kind of moving things along a little bit here, I want to jump into something that Yinka brought up in our group message a little while ago. I did a poll on Twitter, and you know, the results were fairly predictable. JR asked the question again tonight, but Saxy Prince, you know, there's a lot of rumblings. Seats might be warm if things go sideways this season. Those grumblings have they've quieted down a little bit after Case Keenum went out there and did what he did to the Buccaneers, but still want to ask the question, get your thoughts. Things go sideways. Only one guy can stay. Who are you keeping? You keeping Mike Zimmer, the people's champ, or are you keeping Slick Rick? Which way are you going?
I'm actually heavily one way versus the other way. I'm actually heavily in Rick Spielman's camp versus Mike Zimmer. I love Mike Zimmer. I love what he's been able to do with the defense. In 2014, the very first game that I went to, I think it was a preseason game, it was just very clear that this defense was just flying all over the place. And it's just like, I've never seen this defense do this before. But that being said, I've had some critiques as far as Mike Zimmer. You know, like, he is a great DB coach and stuff, but I think his stubbornness has at times gotten in the way of the Vikings' success. His inability to delegate properly has gotten in the way of the Vikings' success. So I think he's a really good coach. I think he's a really great defensive coordinator. I think he's shown he has the ability to be a good head coach. But I think some of the things that he does gets in his own way and maybe doesn't always – maybe not always the greatest scout. I think we've talked about that a few times. As far as what I've seen with Rick Spielman, I think he makes enough decisions for this team to put us in the best position to win football games. I know that you know, the Bradford trade is definitely met with some skepticism, rightfully so. What he's done within the draft, you know, 2016. Some of the picks, the higher picks that he's made have had some questions, but I think overall, I think he's done a fantastic job rebuilding this team so that we're in the conversation of, you know, being considered, we're in the conversation of being considered, you know, playoff and Super Bowl contending team. So, I mean, can you always find another Mike Zimmer? No, because he is very good at what he does, but I think it'd be a lot harder for us to find a good GM that's, we haven't quite seen the success yet, but I think we've seen the growth and potential of what this team could be. And I think that's more on what Rick Spielman has brought to us than Mike Zimmer.
Okay. All right. And JR, how about you, man? Quick reaction. What are your thoughts? Mike Zimmer, Rick Spielman, which way are you going?
This is a really tough question for me, but I mean, I'm in agreement with Yinka. I got to go with Rick Spielman just because the team and the pieces that he has put in place in Minnesota has really been phenomenal. And I just think it's harder to find a good GM as opposed to a good head coach. I know it's not easy finding a good head coach, but it's really hard to find a consistent and good GM, you know, that can draft, negotiate contracts, and keep the salary cap in good situations. And I think that gives Rick Spielman the edge.
All right. Well, we'll move on from this topic before you know, folks come and really – want to attack us after listening here, and we'll get into the thing that people actually, I think, want to talk about, want to hear our thoughts on here, is Vikings play the Lions this week, and, you know, this is potentially a battle for supremacy in the NFC North. You know, Packers, as seems to be the yearly custom, are dealing with a ton of injuries. The Bears are the Bears. They're in a full-on rebuild. And the Vikings and the Lions seem to be teams that are both kind of on that upswing, moving into a place where maybe they will have teams that are well-rounded enough to challenge, you know, Green Bay for that top spot. So, JR, we'll start with you. I guess, what are your thoughts on this game? What are the keys? How does it go? Yeah. fire away, man. What do you think?
I think the biggest thing that they have to do is take a similar game plan to what they did last week. And what I mean by that is, offensively, just keep it simple for Case Keenum. Don't try to take your whole entire playbook, 100-plus plays. Take 35 to 45 plays, master them, and just rep. Just keep repping them. Keep repping them till you master them. And I think that's why Case Keenum had so much success last week. You don't have to take a whole bunch of plays, but you can take a small amount of plays and dress them up and present them in different ways to keep the Detroit defense, you know, on their toes. I'm not sure if Jared Davis, their middle linebacker, who's been a really good player, is playing this week. But if he doesn't play, that'll help. Tavon Wilson is another guy, a safety for the Detroit Lions that didn't play last week as well. I believe both of them practiced today. So I'm not sure if they'll both be back on Sunday. But if those two guys don't play, I think they can have a lot of success. And the one thing you see from the Detroit defense is that they miss a ton of tackles. And what you see with Dalvin Cook is he has the ability to make those guys miss a lot in spaces. So I think offensively, just keep the game plan simple. And for the defense, I think the key is to keep Matt Stafford on the ground. They have to get some type of pass rush. And Everson, I loved Everson Griffin calling out Greg Robinson today. And that shows you that, you know, pass rush is key for this week. So just the offense to keep it simple and for the defense to get some type of pass rush, just to keep Matt Stafford on his heels.
And if there was one matchup that would that concerned you, either offense or defense, which way would it go? Who's the player on Detroit that you are most worried about, you know, taking over the game on either side of the ball?
Defensively, I have to lean towards Darius Slay. I got a lot of respect for his game. I think he's a top 10 to 15 corner in the NFL, very underrated. And offensively, it has to be Theo Riddick out of the backfield, very elusive. Seeing guys like Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks having to guard him out of the backfield kind of worries me a little bit just because he's so shifty.
All right. And Sexy Prince, what are your thoughts, man, going into this game, division, first of a three-game division slate that we have upcoming here? What are you thinking? How do you think this game goes?
Yeah, I think this game is actually going to kind of set the tone for this three-division game gauntlet that we have going on. I looked at some Lions film and sort of obviously watching Vikings film. I think this is really going to come down to that. I don't want to say third wide receiver, but I think it's going to come down to that third most possessed, the third person who has the most possessions within the offense on each side of the ball. Yeah, obviously we know that Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, you know, they're going to get catches and stuff, but you know, are we going to start leaning on Dalvin Cook a little bit more in the passing game, or is Kyle Rudolph going to start showing up a little bit more than he has, or maybe even Laquan Treadwell? But we definitely need, I'm definitely looking at how that third person has the impact, because I do think that that's going to be the deciding factor than we might think in this game. And the same goes for Detroit. You know, obviously they all have Golden Tate going. Baby Tron, Kenny Golladay, you know, he likely is going to have a big impact on the game. So, you know, it kind of goes into what JR was saying with guys like Theo Riddick, Amir Abdullah. Can they kind of cement themselves as guys that we have to stop, or they're going to be continue to make big plays? So, I still think that this is a more than winnable game for the Vikings. I think on paper, they're a lot better team. But yeah, that's where I'm really looking at for, you know, who has advantage in this game.
All right. And Yanka, I'm glad you came in there and saved JR, because I was about to start moving some furniture around here when he didn't call out the man, Baby Tron, as the biggest matchup nightmare that the Vikings would be dealing with from the Detroit Lions offense. But you came in there for the save, so thank you on that one there. You know, you guys gave us your keys. JR, start with you. Score prediction, bold prediction.
Vikings 27, Lions 17. Danielle Hunter gets 2 sacks.
Okay, all right. Saxy Prince, man, how about you? Saxy Prince?
Sorry, my bad. I'm going to say Vikings 27, Lions 19. And I think my bold predictions is going to be I think Adam Thielen gets 2 touchdowns this game.
Okay. All right. And I think the Vikings are going to win a very close one. So I think the Vikings will win this one 31-28. And my bold prediction, you know, and since Miles is not here, my bold prediction will be in memory of Miles. My bold prediction is that this is actually the week where the man Laquon Treadwell scores 1 touchdown. Because if you look at the matchups, Treadwell on Nevin Lawson, that looks to be a matchup that he should be able to win. So Treadwell is getting in to the end zone. And the second part of my bold prediction is that Kyle Rudolph will have over 50 yards receiving and a touchdown this week. Because, you know, it's time.
So you do agree that that third guy is going to be really important in this game.
Well, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I think that, what I'm really, really, really actually excited for is I'm really excited to see how this matchup between like Stephon Diggs and Darius Slay goes. That looks like it'll be a good one. I'm interested to see Thielen put Quandre Diggs to the test to see if, you know, the renaissance that he seems to be showing per Pro Football Focus's grades is actually for real, or, you know, because I think he was like their worst graded cornerback last year and is, you know, in the top 5. So I'm really interested to see how that turns around and if he actually is good or if it's just kind of a small sample quirk. And but I think that this is the game that that Kyle Rudolph will make some noise. And, you know, hopefully for Miles' sake, you know, our man Treadwell, sophomore surge, gets on the board. But also, like Arif said, just in time to let Michael Floyd come take his spot. So that's where I'm at with it.
I am curious, though, because I mean, I've tried to wrestle with this in my mind, see how it works, like logistically. If it makes any sense to just play Rhodes on one side and Wayne's on another side, or if it makes sense to have Rhodes shadow Golden Tate. I'm kind of wrestling with, you know, if he should shadow or if he should just, you know, kind of play sides and lock down his side.
Yeah, I don't know. I've gone back and forth on this one. JR, I guess, do you have a strong take on this? You think we play sides in this game, or you want Rhodes kind of out there trying to lock down the number one Golden Tate for Detroit?
Nah, I think they'll play sides in this game.
Yeah, and with them playing sides, I guess, what would you be your biggest concern, I guess, how do you feel about Trey Waynes on, you know, a Marvin Jones or even on a Galladay?
It's definitely scary. I think the slot scares me more than anything. I'm not sure if they put Galladay in the slot yet or anything like that, but any of those guys in the slot really scare me.
All right. Well, it seems like you had a question about the Lions and how they align their guys. And we have the perfect person here who just joined us who should be able to answer some of those questions. So Mike Payton is on with us this evening. He's going to preview things in the Vikings-Lions matchup from the perspective of the Detroit Lions. So, Mike, thank you for joining us here on the Climbing the Pocket podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we will get you started with an easy question, a little icebreaker here. Yes, tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find your work, and how you became a Detroit Lions fan.
I write for Pride of Detroit and cover college and high school sports for Holland Sentinel, which is our local newspaper, kind of a small town here. But obviously, I think I became a Lions fan probably the same way you guys became a Vikings fan, just kind of watching it, you know, with the family growing up, with the, you know, my dad and my grandpa and all that stuff. And, you know, it's just one of those things that I just can't seem to shake.
That's awesome. So a couple things we want to get into here. I guess thing that made a lot of news in the offseason was, you know, Stafford getting all that money. And then something that's made a bit of news here recently is the fact that it looked like Caldwell also was extended and they just didn't make an announcement or a big deal of it. So I guess, how are those things playing amongst the fan base? What do Lions fans think about all the money that Stafford is making? And if that is the right way for you guys to go about building the team, and what are the thoughts on Caldwell in the fan base? Cause I know that at times, because he is that kind of, mild-mannered, quiet guy that sometimes people do seem to want to turn on him with a quickness. So are people happy that Caldwell was extended, and how do people feel about Stafford?
As for Caldwell, it's a really mixed bunch. You know, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the Detroit Lions and their fans, but we have this thing around here where we always want to start the backup quarterback, and we always want a brand new head coach and brand new this and the brand new that. And I think that you know that's extended over to Caldwell as it always has, and you know I think Jim is the perfect man for the job. I like the continuity that he brings to the squad, and I think that just having him and the presence he brings in the locker room, and the fact that all these guys trust him so much, it's such a big deal, you know, towards winning in the future. You know, with the fans, a lot of them want the you know, whoever the new hot coordinator is, or they want Matt Patricia, or they want Josh McDaniels, somebody that is affiliated with the Patriots and Bob Quinn. So that's kind of the read on that. As far as Matthew Stafford goes, early on it was, how could you pay this guy that much money? Because he's never won a playoff game. And then I had, you know, I got to remind these guys that quarterback wins is not a real stat. I think you and I have talked about that before, JR. And, you know, now that the season has begun, Stafford has actually been playing quite well. He's only thrown one pick, which is actually the first pass of the entire season. Otherwise, he's been on fire. He's already an MVP candidate. He's well worth the money. If you want to build a team, you got to have a great quarterback, and they are definitely going the right route there.
All right, and then I guess the next question is kind of how have things gone for Detroit? Because one of the things that we do notice as you know, fans, you kind of look at Detroit over the past couple of years, it seems that you guys win a lot of really weird games, a lot of close games, a lot of seemingly, I guess from the outside looking in, kind of fluky games that you guys are kind of in there, where like one play here or there is kind of the deciding factor in whether it's a win or it's a loss. So this year, how have things gone? Is it the same thing, or is it more of kind of the same, you know, cardiac kids routine from the Detroit Lions?
Well, the first two games, you know, against Atlanta, or not Atlanta, but against Arizona, a lot of people like to call that a comeback, but, you know, I don't really see it that way. The Lions kind of, you know, they stumbled early, and then they wound up kind of just dominating the Cardinals, you know, once the game was over. Then, obviously, in New York, they surprised a lot of people, and, you know, they were able to get in the end zone a few times on that Giants defense. It's, you know, supposed to be one of the better defense in the league. And then, you know, last week, obviously, they didn't win the game. Technically, they did. And I'm going to tell the whole world that they were 3-0. I don't care what anybody says. You know, I think you saw that cardiac cat style play that the Lions have shown over the past 4 or 5 years. And it is a really good thing. You know, this Lions team has all the offensive capability in the world, but for some odd reason, they just like to get behind. And whenever they're behind, that's when they seem to just turn it up and become a better team. So, I think if you ask any Lions fan, a win is all that matters. But it would really be nice if the Lions could get up, you know, get out ahead 35 points and just ride that to the end of the game for once.
Mike, JR here. Thanks for joining us, man. Once again, you guys drafted one of my favorite players in the entire draft, and Jared Davis in the first round. Just talk about his impact so far. I know he missed the game last week with the concussion, I believe it was, but just talk about his impact and how he's played thus far.
I think the biggest way to talk about Jared Davis's impact is his impact when he's not on the field. And you guys, I don't know if you saw Sunday's Lions game, but Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman were just running all over the Lions, and that's not an odd thing. We all know that that's probably the best running back duo in the league. But Davis in the lineup, he's able to kind of help in the run stop area. He's able to help, especially against tight ends. I know that, you know, Kyle Rudolph could have himself a day on Sunday if Jared's not playing, and as could Dalvin Cook. But you definitely noticed that Jared wasn't there, and the field was a lot more open for the running backs and a lot more open for the tight ends over the middle. So not having him is a big deal. but he is in stage four of the concussion protocol system. He did have a limited practice today, so I would expect him to be there on Sunday.
Mike, this is Inka here. I appreciate you joining us tonight. Just quick question: what do you really feel is the keys to this game? What would it take for the Lions to do to really get the victory over the Vikings?
They're going to have to control the Vikings defense, and that's not an easy feat to do, especially with their offensive line being kind of beat up a little bit. We don't know if TJ Lang's going to play at this point. He did not practice today with a fibula injury, which no one seems to know what that is because it's never been listed on the injury list before. They've got Greg Robinson in there who is obviously, we all know how bad Greg Robinson is. We don't know if we're going to have our starting center and Travis Swanson back for the game. He did practice today, but it was limited. So it's going to be hard for the Lions if those players are not there, especially with, guys like Everson Griffin, on the defensive line who can just get home on so many offensive tackles in this league. And if he's going up against second-rate guys, he could eat all day. So I would definitely say it's the Vikings defense that the Lions are going to have to worry about. Case Keenum came in last year as a member of the Rams and threw 19 straight completions. So if the Vikings wind up going with Case Keenum, there's something about the Lions and backup quarterbacks. They just can't seem to play well against them.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question that I wanted to ask you is, kind of going into this game, when you look at the Lions secondary and how they've played so far this year, and then you look at the Vikings secondary and how they've played, and obviously, they're maybe not getting as much, press or notoriety right now, but, Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay are a very, very good trio of wide receivers. And obviously the Vikings are headlined by Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. So when you look at these matchups, wide receivers versus secondaries, I guess, which side do you see having an advantage?
At this point, I certainly don't want to sound like the homer here, but I've got to go with the Lions. I really like Xavier Rhodes. I think he's probably the best corner in the league right now. But outside of Xavier, I'm not really sure what you guys have that could compete, with his type of ability. But then again, on the Lions side, they've got Darius Slay and Glover Quinn, who's playing like an elite safety right now, and they've got Nevin Lawson and Quandre Diggs, two guys that are both rated very high and. On Pro Football Focus, I know Quandre, I think, is the sixth rated corner in the league right now, as far as coverage goes. So there's going to be some opportunities there for the Lions secondary. I mean, you saw they were able to pick off Matt Ryan three times last week, and that is no easy feat. That's a guy that hasn't been picked off very much in a very long time. So they've also been able to get after Eli, and they got after Carson Palmer. They got four interceptions on Palmer. They're working with a plus six turnover ratio right now. So the Lions secondary, Lions defense is a lot more dangerous than I think most people realize. But then again, on the Vikings side, Xavier Rhodes is scary. I know Mike Evans doesn't seem to think so, but he got pretty embarrassed on Sunday.
Well, all right then. I guess Yinka, JR, did you have any follow-up questions before we get to the final two here? All right, we'll take silence as golden then, I guess. So, Mike, I know that you said you're writing a couple places there, I guess. What upcoming projects do you have, and where should we look for them?
Well, tomorrow morning I'll have the random stats article coming out. It's basically every week I go through the history of the Lions and whatever opponent that they're facing, and I pick out the most obscure facts and stats that I could find, like how many birds has the Bank of America Stadium killed this year, stuff like that. That'll all be out in the morning. I highly just give it a look. It's pretty good piece. It's pretty funny. You guys might think it's you might get a laugh out of it as well.
Awesome. We'll definitely check that out. And then final question, I guess it's a two-part one for you. What is your bold prediction for this game? And then what is your score prediction for this game?
Bold prediction. I mean, if I'm going overly bold, I think that I think that Golden Tate will have a good day against Xavier Rhodes. I'm not going to say he's going to get 150 yards and three touchdowns or anything crazy like that, but I think he can get in the end zone against Xavier. So that is my bold prediction.
So Golden Tate's getting in the end zone, but you got to give us some yards here. I mean, how many yards is he putting up?
I think that Golden can put up 100 yards. I mean, this is a guy that was in the top five in the league in yards after catch last year and led the league in broken tackles. So he's a hard guy to stop. He's a problem. But then Xavier Rhodes, like I said, he's probably the best corner in the league. That should be a fun matchup. But I think they're going to kind of throw Golden all over the place. And I do see him getting 100 yards. I'll probably throw a touchdown in there too.
Awesome. And what about the score, man?
Score now. This is a little different, and I'm going to sound like a total homer right now. And the thing is that this is a really upset Lions team. They are extremely mad about what happened to them on Sunday, and I know the Vikings have been playing pretty well lately too. But I just see the Lions coming out with a vengeance in this game. So I'm going to take the Lions with 35-24.
35 points on a Mike Zimmer defense. I love it.
The Vikings season might end on Sunday if that happens.
But maybe even more bold, only 24 points by a Case Keenum-led offense? I mean, did you see what he did last week?
I know, guys. Like I said, I'm going to sound like a homer, but I'm telling you, this team is riled up, man. They are looking for blood.
Well, that is awesome, man. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for the insight. We'll definitely check out that piece tomorrow. And I guess have a good night, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Wow, 35 points, guys.
35 points. Whew, man.
But it's like, so obviously, you know, Mike is a Detroit Lions fan. He writes about them. So, you know, and he couched his answers a couple of times by saying, you know, I don't want to be a homer. But it's not just Mike. One of my coworkers up here is a diehard Lions fan. And they are a confident bunch. Like, he has been talking just slick for weeks now. Like, he really thinks they might go to the Super Bowl or something. And I don't know. I look at them, and I just don't know if they're really that good.
We shall see.
19 straight completions for Case Keenum. What is this? Like, Case Keenum gets in, and maybe they signed him because he was, you know, the Buccaneers and Lions killer for this stretch of the season. We just didn't know it when they picked him up.
I think in the Mike Zimmer era, I want to say four times Zimmer has ever had a team put up 35 or more points on them. The Seahawks in 2015, the Green Bay Packers, I believe, in 2015. Green Bay last year.
Colts.
The Colts last year too, right?
And then the Colts. Those are the only teams that are, did the Redskins, Washington,
I don't think they got that many.
I don't know, man. This is your obscure stat. You're supposed to look this one up, man.
he said it out of nowhere, and I'm thinking to myself, that doesn't seem about right.
All right. Well, before we transition to wrap the show up, close things off here, you know, Yinka, you are I see you warming up there. You know, you had another game this week. So, you know, we need recap. You gotta let us know how to go this week. We saw the stats on Twitter. You know, how's it looking? You're getting into rhythm. You know, second game out there, you're starting to sync up with the receivers. What's going on, man?
Yeah, man, there's a little bit more action happened this week. I actually showed up, I wasn't late, but I didn't get enough time to like do install this week. So it was still a little bit more of like
it sounds like you were late, sir. Sounds like you were late.
Guys just running everywhere and whatnot. But we lost again this week, but I took the approach to try to just be, you know, the good leader, just like let everybody – everyone wants to play quarterback until they start playing quarterback, and then they realize, I don't want to play quarterback no more. So there's
QB,
a lot of
– QB1 JR, as someone with a bit of experience with this, I can't remember. There's an expression that they always use when they're talking about the quarterbacks and coming to the facility. Is it shows up right at game time? Yeah. First in the build, something like JR. What's that expression about quarterback?
First one in, last one out.
Oh, okay.
First of all, before you start attacking me and all that stuff, the The week before, I actually was the first and last one out the building. This one was just a unique week because I was coming out of I have the short film I think I told you guys about that I'm shooting in a couple weeks. I had some prep to do for that. That's why I ended up the schedule's over the top. But some interesting news. There's a chance that we might have an appearance by one of the Climbing Pocket podcasts own Miles Gorham. He might be coming in for this next week. So I might get an upgrade at wide receiver. Even though I'm really proud of my team, I'm really proud of my wide receiver core. They're doing really great. Our women are doing beasting it up. Guys are getting open and whatnot. So yeah, we'll see how it affects my A dot completion percentage, my touchdowns that I throw. Twitter kind of roasted me a little bit because they're getting a little concerned about the amount of picks that I'm throwing. So
yeah, thus far, that TD to interception ratio, we need to work on that, man.
It's not good.
We do. We really do. I'll take full responsibility for that. I need to throw a little bit more as far as touchdowns and whatnot.
But we got to have some yards. You didn't put yards on there last time.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I think the field's probably about maybe 50 or 60 yards or whatever, because you can really only get, like, two first downs and then you're in first and goal. So it's probably, like, field's probably only, like, you know, 40 or 50 yards or whatever the case is. But I'll start dropping some yards this week.
And when we get that video footage, man?
Oh, this next week. I got someone coming out. I was just like, hey, can you come out and watch the game, just start videoing some stuff. So y'all have some video to come along with your roasting. So
yes, sir. I'm ready. No, yes. Roasting. We are putting together the hype film.
We need y'all
to find a fire extinguisher for somewhere. We can have you and Miles coming through the smoke like old school Miami. We ready, man. Hey. We gonna get some music on there for you.
Hey, it's install week, man. I got plays drawn up. You know, but here's the crappy part is, you know, I've been letting my one of my teammates kind of run the defense a little bit more, and he had me kind of play QB spy, you know, slash kind of defensive end and whatnot, which didn't really fit me because I'm my best cover corner. So they put up way too many touchdowns on us, and we got into a hole really fast. So that's when we had to, you know, stretch the field a little bit more. And I'm gonna as the one of the leaders on the team, I'm gonna like definitely veto me playing a QB spy. I'm not tall enough to be doing all that. I like getting my Mac Alexander on, you know, just being a bully.
Well, we are looking forward to it, man. We definitely need to get that footage of you and Miles out there. What I will ask, you know, because you know, we do have a podcast to record, and we're gonna need Miles because, you know, need him to get out there early, get some warm up in. We can't have any pulled hamstrings or anything like that because Miles' wife, she'll shut that down on him.
Oh, she'll shut it down out so there getting fast,
hurt, messing around with Miles, you. So,
no, Miles' wife will come after me if he gets okay. Hurt.
Yeah, so you know, no messing around. No messing around. It's Sexy Prince on news on this end that I think that you would appreciate. So, yeah, I'm on the ride home today. My wife calls me. She's like, yeah, I went to the music store and, rented a keyboard. Came back. Music lessons going on in my living room. So,
yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, my eldest is trying to learn to play piano with my wife teaching her, which is hilarious to watch. But, yeah, back in there playing music again. So, that was fun.
Your wife has some keyboard skills? Is this like... Did she like playing like church or is it?
Yeah, she used to. Yeah, she played growing up, and so it's starting to come back. She can still read music a little bit, but getting the muscle memory back. So she's in there hitting it up, and then Adriana's is hopping in, thinking she should already know how to play, but not knowing how to do anything and getting frustrated. So it was hilarious to listen to, you know, Josie being like, "Slow down, you just need to do your scales." And Adriana's like, "I want to play that song. Let me play that song." But yeah, man.
It's crazy because the funny thing is when I get into that rut of, you know, not being able to play like some of the more advanced stuff that I'm always able to play, I do really go back to scales, I go back to fundamentals, and I just improve those. And it's so amazing to still see how the fundamentals just transforms, you know, even high levels of playing and stuff. So, yeah, tell her to stick with them scales, man. They're important.
For sure. Well, I think that's most of what we had to talk about. We've gone off on a bit of a tangent here towards the end, but before we go, I guess, JR, you did just drop that awesome piece on Purple PTSD. Is there anything else we should be on the lookout for you?
Yeah, so I got another article coming next week about Xavier Rhodes, and so it's called The Rhodes to Stardom, just talking about how he's transitioned his game from his rookie year to now.
And in that piece, are you going to explain why Pro Football Focus hates him so much?
Yes, I will make sure to put that in there.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Saxy Prince, man, how about you? What you, other than drafting up playbooks, what else you got going on? What other writing you doing?
Yeah, I actually just dropped the piece earlier this evening. It's called Feast on the Field. Yeah, just go take a look at it. It's great. I had the wonderful opportunity a couple weeks ago to go to US Bank Stadium. They were having this, like, all these chefs that worked with the Schwan's company, same people who do all the ice cream and stuff. And it was phenomenal food, great experience. And yeah, just kind of put, you know, pen to paper and threw that out. I'll probably do a write-up just to preview the Lions game. I'll have another Photoshop ready before the game. I'm going to try to get these done a little bit earlier just so, yeah, so we got more time for people to view them, enjoy them and stuff. Hope people are enjoying them because I'm enjoying doing them.
Well, that is good to hear. As for me, still doing this pod with Luke and Eric, and just, you know, inspired by QB1 today, started messing around with some video editing stuff again, and start playing around with that a little bit, try to get some video content up there on the YouTube channel. Probably drop that first the test video out there at some point here where we can talk about my man once again, Stephon Diggs, in the red zone. You know, going back a couple years, what we're seeing this year was prophesized by Teddy Bridgewater. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I got. Yes, want to say, Saxy Prince, thank you for coming out this evening.
JR. Oh, by the way, and just drop it off for the games that flag football that I play, playing quarterback. I'm wearing 2 gloves, y'all.
Oh boy,
just to let you know.
Oh boy,
2 gloves.
Well, stop throwing so many interceptions, or we're gonna make you take one of them off. Okay. All right, man. Well, JR, thanks for coming out tonight, man. And Miles, he is out, hopefully scoring some goals and making us proud in soccer. And we'll be back with us on the next one. So, yep, Jason Brown here with JR, Saxy Prince. Y'all have a good night.